This is the September 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. On Friday morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released both the crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. It showed there is now a corn carry in from the old crop of 1.187 billion bushels, that this crop in the ground now to be harvested shortly will be on 85.1 million acres with a yield of 176.3 bushels to the acre, for a total production of 14.996 billion bushels, an average cash price of $5.45, with a carryout of 1.408 billion by the time we get to next fall. For soybeans, those numbers are 175 million bushels for the carry-in, 86.4 for the harvested acreage, 50.6 for the yield. 4.374 is the total production for the year, a carryout by the time we get to fall of next year at 185 million bushels, and $12.90 is the average cash price. Both seasons' average cash prices are lower. Corn down from $5.75 again to $5.45, and soybeans down from $13.70 to $12.90. Let's begin by getting an assessment of what these numbers meant when they were first shown to our panelists today. I think I'll start with you, Joe Vaklovic.
Well, the report in general had a bearish tone to it when you look at corn and soybeans. I mean, higher carryout estimates, higher yield estimates. But I think that going into this, a lot of that was expected. There was a widespread expectation for a bearish tone. And I guess we got kind of a buy the rumor, sell the fact thing. You know, the corn market spiked down after the number, but then rallied back. Soybean market rallied on the number. I just don't think that there was anything here that was totally unexpected. You saw USDA increase their corn acreage number. They decreased their soybean acreage number. Some people thought that that would go up, but just not enough bearish news here to result in a continuation of the sell-off, at least here on Friday. Now, could the sell-off continue into next week? Could it continue into October 1st, as it often does seasonally? That's very possible. But on Friday, not a bad action at all, really.
Yeah, so your expectation is that the market will show strength later in the fall then?
I don't know if that's my expectation, but from a seasonal or historical standpoint, you know, it's normal for the market to move lower into harvest and then carve out some sort of bottom around the first week of October, give or take. And in a lot of years, you will see some sort of post-harvest strength in, you know, November, December, into the first part of the following year. I wouldn't be surprised if we followed that template, but given the still tight, in general, supply and demand situations for the row crop markets, I mean, you could carve out a bottom early. That may have been your harvest low, you know, here Friday morning after the report, for all I know.
Aaron Curtis from Midco, your assessment of the USDA reports?
Well, I think the market or trade going in was expecting kind of a bearish release to it. Of course, we got some early data from the FSA, which kind of hinted that acres is probably going to be up this month. So that's probably not as much surprise with the harvested acres increase on corn. Yield increases here, you know, I guess as expected, ending stocks within the shouting distance of the ranges. So I guess the fact that there wasn't an extremely bearish number be seen out there, most could say it's within expectations. Say that probably makes sense why the market's starting to recover here. It's been obviously a downtrend going into the report. Nothing outstanding here in the report today, so market's kind of recovering here, which is probably as expected, especially what it looks like, you know, Gulf region going to get kind of back to work a little bit. That's been kind of weighing on the market here. CIF values perking up here a little bit, finally late this week, so allowing a little bit of a catch your breath and on a little bit of a recovery here, and the report didn't really derail that too much to cause anything to push into new lows.
And finally, Matt Bennett, we should probably get your assessment of the reports as well.
Well, you know, 176.3 was pretty close to what we were expecting for the report. I believe our official estimate was 176.1. We thought that it would come in somewhere between USDA's August number and Pro Farmer's number, quite frankly, because they got out in the field and we thought, you know, they were probably going to see a little bit more than, you know, maybe what USDA was going to see. But the carryout kind of jumped out to me. I think we've talked about it a little bit here recently. I expected production to come up as it did. You know, you got 15 billion bushels, but I did expect that, you know, that you'd see demand come back in. So in August, you lost 190 million bushels of demand. Pick some of that back up here this month, and carryout only goes up 165, 166 million bushels. So for corn, I thought it could have been a much worse report. I think it's been expected to be bearish for long enough that, you know, you see the reaction wasn't all that negative. And I think that's the reason why for me. Beans, there's not a lot to talk about there. You know, you picked up acres and corn, no story there for beans as far as acres is concerned. Take yield up a little bit, which everyone had to assume with a fairly wet August, you know, but carry out doesn't change a whole lot. You go up 30 million bushels, you're still extremely tight there on beans.
You mentioned acreage going up and corn up around 600,000 acres for both planted and harvested. Does the fact that they use the same number for each bother you at all?
Maybe a little bit. I think that, you know, whenever I look at planted versus harvested, we might see a little more disparity there this year than what we typically would. And part of the reason I say that is because everyone we know that's chopping silage, especially west of Mississippi, is telling us that they're having to chop a lot more silage to get the tonnage they want this year. And so most estimates out there in the Western Corn Belt are that silage acreage is going to actually be quite a bit higher than what they previously would have expected. So, you know, I think that maybe they could tick that harvested down just a little bit, but I'm not going to make any big deal over it either.
USDA raised the feed and residual number by 75 million bushels. Do you think they're correct?
That's a tough one. I was kind of surprised to see that, quite frankly. I was not at all surprised with exports, but, you know, there's some folks that felt like they could maybe raise it a little bit. Probably got more to do with residuals than what it does feed, because I don't know with placements where they're at that I can get on board with a big upward revision there. But, you know, whenever they've extracted some out last month, it's not hard to fathom they might put a little bit back in there.
Exports, as you pointed to, are also up 75 million bushels throughout a good portion of the last month, month and a half, maybe longer than that. You've been talking about 550 cash corn and that the market has been sort of aiming at that direction. USDA now puts the season's average cash price at 545. But of course, the marketplace for December corn is much lower than that. Your expectations over the next week or 2 weeks for what happens?
Yeah, I think a person has to pay attention to exactly what you just said. USDA is expecting that this marketing year's average cash price can be 545, and golly, you can't come close to that as you and I are sitting here talking today. So I think that tells you that the USDA is not all that bearish as far as outward, you know, looking out farther, whether it's demand, whether do they think that this crop is going to grow anymore. Maybe they don't think that. And so, you know, as far as the producer is concerned, yeah, you want to pay attention to it. But at the same time, if you're looking at really good yields, and I think that some folks may be a little disappointed right off the bat, but still looking at awfully strong yields, you still have to pay attention to the fact that December corn's trading pretty close to 520, you know, and historically, that's an awfully good price, especially the yields we're talking about.
And sometimes it's hard to get back to those cash prices if they're high in the higher, that is, in the fall by the time you get to January or other times when you might market, I suppose.
Yes. And so, you know, I think the producers who were fairly heavily sold compared to the last few years, if you talk to grain elevators, they're going to say, hey, there's been more that's been priced this year than what they've seen in a while. And I think that's because we had a long window to do so, plus good summer weather. But I think if you're in that situation, then you probably want to be maybe a little more hesitant, because I do see really good opportunities moving forward. If you're starting again, I mean, I'm going to say starting, but starting from this month with a 1-4 carryout, you know, I do think that there's room for that maybe to be trimmed moving forward. And given the fact that Brazil you know, had an off crop, there's no question in my mind, you know, that our exports do have the potential to grow a little bit more yet. So, you know, I got to think that this carryout number at 1.4, if I was going to guess whether it's going to get smaller or bigger, I'd probably guess it's going to get a little smaller, quite frankly.
Have you thought yet about the grain stocks, the final figures that will be released at the end of this month and what those will look like?
Yeah, we kind of felt like you would see old crop carry grow, and that's what we saw. It didn't grow quite as much as what, you know, maybe some people thought it would. But I tell you what, 2 years in a row, Todd, we've had a bullish surprise on September 30th. I'm not saying that we're going to see another 250 to 300 type bullish surprise like we've seen 2 years in a row. But I certainly think that you're going to be fairly close to a billion bushels. I'll tell you what, you talk to any elevator system throughout the Corn Belt, and they're going to tell you that coming into harvest, they were pretty darn low on stocks. I mean, we talked to several large-scale end users who were saying that they were down to a train load maybe, and that they hadn't ever been that tight. So I think that we're as tight on stocks this year as what any of us have ever seen, especially relative to the type of crop that we're growing.
You know, when I think about the season's average cash prices, the 575 to 545 drop for corn doesn't seem to be as big to me, and I know it is, as the 1370 cash price for soybeans, which is now $12.90. What should producers do?
Well, I think producers have to take a year like this and, in my opinion, think about where we've come from. You know, think about what the situation was 1 year ago today. I always want to benchmark myself. So 1290, I know a lot of folks say, boy, that doesn't sound near as good as 1370. You know, and then you talk to a grower that, like I talked to this morning, that was cutting some really early maturing beans that were yielding 82 bushels. So you talk about 82 bushel beans. I know not everyone's going to have beans like that. But if you're upset about 1290 beans, versus 82 bushel per acre, you know, you're going to have to complain to someone else, because that's a pretty darn good income. And so sometimes I think we look at what's happened in the past and we get disillusioned by that, you know, and we think, you know what, we don't want to sell until we get back up closer to the highs. Well, you know, this might be one of those years that you don't get back closer to the highs, because we all know the Brazilians are going to bring a significant amount of acres towards the market again this year. The market's asking for it. They're going to reward it. Same thing in Argentina. And I think that you've got to expect really, really strong competition worldwide, really, this year.
You know, on soybeans, they'll be, we'll get to the harvest soon enough for both corn and soybeans. But should producers sell beans across the scale? And by that, I'm thinking, do they need to make more sales now rather than later as they pull those beans across the scale?
So being the guys that I work with Ag Market, you know, we were discussing this over the last weekend, you know, and we closed this last week, you know, pretty close to $13. And we thought, you know, a lot of producers are expecting, after being out in their fields and looking at what they've got, look, it's going out there with agronomists, feel like they've got above APH beans. Not everyone, but most of the producers we work with. So we're thinking to ourselves, you know, how's this going to look to us if we end up dropping a dollar or dropping more than that? Maybe we need to get more aggressive. So we actually moved to 75% of expected production sold. You know, and we also talked to our growers that, you know what, if you end up in a situation where you're hauling across the scale and you still got $13 beans or $12.75 beans, we still feel like selling the rest of them across the scale makes good sense with those types of yields. Now, can you re-own something like that? Absolutely. There's ways you can do so cheaply. But in my opinion, turning your nose up at $13 beans at these yields is probably not very smart business.
Aaron, can you tell me just a bit about basis nearby deferred and the carry in the market for both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, there's still some premiums on old crop, depending on where you're at. We're still seeing some, especially on corn and soybean. Situation on basis has really calmed down and really flattened out to be more of a new crop bid right now. But corn's still seeing a little bit of premiums in some spots around the Corn Belt as harvest is still a little slow to get started. It's still going to be, you know, 2 to 3 weeks in most parts of the Midwest before harvest really gets picking up. So we are seeing a little bit of premium. Ethanol margins continue to be pretty positive in the spot market. So continue to see that offering some support to some basis around the Midwest. I think the river's probably got the most attention this week, Todd, just because of what's been going on in the Gulf. Just that uncertainty of when we're going to be able to really load at any sort of capacity really backed basis off, barge freight firmed up, and CIF values really kind of fell apart, so to speak, right, with just that uncertainty. But like I said, we have seen some recovery here late this week. So a little bit of premium, old crop, that's starting to gradually slip away here as we get closer to harvest. And then the question is going to be, you know, what does this export program look like, Todd, and what's going to be the capacity here as we move into the Gulf? It looks like some more power is going to be available here as we go into next week for some of those export loading facilities. We are seeing some loading up the river closer to Baton Rouge, so that's helping a little bit. Some of the commitments have been shifted to some other ports around the U.S., but really need the Gulf to be back up and running. I guess a little bit of the saving grace, if you want to say it that way, is the fact that the September export program was pretty light compared to what we saw a year ago. So it just wasn't quite the busy pace that we saw last year. So that probably helped a little bit just in terms of the capacity that is available down there. But there are going to be a couple facilities that are going to take quite a few weeks to get back and going. So we still got some concern down there, but the picture looks a little brighter here the last couple of days than we saw earlier in the week, Todd.
What's the difference between your fall delivery basis and, for instance, your January contract?
Well, if you look at, let's just use, you know, Central Illinois, Decatur as an example, right? Decatur is posted at option price for October. That'd be 15 over the March for January. So, you know, developing a little bit of carry there. We have moved the spreads out here a little bit with this export concern. We went from the D's March, you know, kind of trading in that 6 to 7 range all the way out to almost 10 cents here. Nov Jan bean spread went from trading in that 4 to 6 range all the way out to 10 cents. So, you know, the export concern, the lack of lack of certainty there, I guess, with what the export program was going to look like this fall, did push some more carry into the market, and the basis kind of reflected that as well.
Yeah, so I have a question about that, because option price tells me that at delivery tells me they really need corn and want it delivered, but it seems odd to me that they would be 15 over by the time we got to January.
Yeah, so I think it speaks to a little bit of just what the expectation is here for moving forward in terms of, you know, the system's going to be pretty empty going into harvest. So, you know, option price is, you know, a pretty good number for harvest for October for Decatur, just the fact that it's going to be pretty empty everywhere for the most part, just due to the inverted structure that we've seen in the market. Encouraged everyone to get as empty as possible here. So, you know, it's going to be a few weeks we get into harvest before it feels like harvest, if that makes any sense, Todd, just because the structure of the system is so empty going in. So I think it also speaks to a little bit of that, just the demand concern for the export side, right, just in that gut slot of harvest, right? What is the availability of demand going to be into October, and what's going to be some outlet for some of this corn as we go into the gut slot of harvest if that river system isn't performing up to capacity?
Yeah, I think for me, Aaron, what I have, it's not a concern, but what just confuses me some is that option price tells me that they want this and that I should sell across the scale. But a carry in the market tells me, no, wait a second, I don't want it, and you should wait and deliver it in January. And it just seems odd to me.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit out of whack, I would say, Todd, just because of what's going on in the river system. Just look at how weak those values got over the last week to 10 days with the hurricane. And I think some of these basis disparities are going to start correcting itself a little bit over time here as we get a little more certainty with what's going to happen in the Gulf. And I think we'll see that here over the next week to 10 days.
Okay, so that brings me to a marketing question. Is this a point at which you look if you have storage on the farm and you're going to deliver in January or February or March or whatever, and you say, you know, that basis level seems pretty good, and maybe I should lock it in?
I think it's partly speaks on what you think demand is going to be here moving forward. I think corn export demand is going to be pretty solid. Ethanol demand is going to be pretty solid as well. So, you know, from a straight basis standpoint, I would think that, you know, those are, you know, good values to be looking at. And the other piece of that, Todd, is what's the farmer going to do here? I think, you know, 50 cents ago, we would have said that the farmer's probably going to sell quite a bit of corn across the scale, especially if it's 200 plus corn, which has got good potential here in most of parts of Illinois. But now that we've got cash prices now down under $5, I think there's probably a little more talk that, you know, farmers probably going to hold on to a few more things, right, as we move forward. Definitely there's no money needs out in the country right now from the producer standpoint. So I would think we probably push a little more grain into storage this fall if these prices stay on this lower end that we've seen here the last few weeks. So that would have to encourage basis maybe to have to do a little more work to try to get things to move. But, you know, here on the 10th of September, harvest just getting started here. A lot of yield uncertainty still and demand uncertainty. It's just, you know, going to be a lot of moving parts, I guess, over the next couple of weeks as we try to settle into what harvest is going to look like.
Joe Baklevic, when you take a look at things coming forward fundamentally, what are you watching? And I have one in mind as it relates to today's report, because USDA managed to raise yields in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, North Dakota, and Nebraska. And they also did not change the yield in South Dakota. Will those get bigger?
I think it's possible. I have quite a few customers in those, you know, areas of the Western Corn Belt, Northern Plains, and the late season rains that they caught were helpful. How helpful? What does that mean for those, you know, yield state by state and nationally? I don't know. I will say that if you had anything close to trend yields, which we won't, but if we did in say Minnesota and the Dakotas, we'd be looking at record national corn and soybean yields without a doubt, because we have records being projected in so many areas of the central and eastern corn belt. It wouldn't be hard to get to a record national yield if you had something decent in those areas. That's not going to happen, but I think that there is room for further upward revisions in Minnesota in particular. I think that's the area that I think those late season rains may have helped the most.
How do you view marketing going forward of that crop that has not been priced yet?
Well, this time of year, typically the thing to look to do would be to avoid flat price sales, meaning that you don't necessarily want to be pricing the futures portion of the crop at this time of year. This is historically the worst time of year to do it. This is, however, a time of year to attempt to capture carry on existing sales. And if you have unpriced bushels, you should look at the carry in the corn and soybean markets. And a lot of people thought we never see carry in these new crop corn and soybean markets, yet we have carry here today. If the carry gets wide enough, you can look to price some of your bushels versus those deferred contracts. You know, March 22 corn, March 22 beans, May 22 corn, May 22 beans, out to July of next year. You get the carries wide enough and you're not too far away from targets that I would consider. You could start to price bushels that you're going to store versus those higher price deferred contracts.
Anything else in the marketplace or the outside markets that worries you at this point or gives you hope?
Well, the outside markets and you know, that whole situation regarding the Fed and low interest rates is absolutely terrifying, but that we can have that conversation a different day. Some of the stuff regarding China is interesting. So China, their government had a report out just yesterday, I think, and they reduced their estimate for corn feeding. They're at 187 million metric tons. USDA increased their number to 214 today. So you've got a little bit of a disparity there, to say the least. I don't know exactly how that's going to play out, Todd, but it seems like there are some signals here that Chinese demand for feed grains is wavering a little bit. They've recently canceled some purchases of feed grains from other countries. China has not made a purchase of new crop U.S. corn since May. They've got a record book, but they haven't bought anything for a long time. Hog expansion of that hog herd in China has been reduced. USDA is telling us it's still going to be really good. China saying not so much. Where does it end up? I really don't know, but you can't ignore the fact that China hasn't made a new corn purchase since the month of May for this 2021 crop.
Yeah, China, the Chinese government saying this was because of the low price of hogs in China. So that's not a production issue in terms of we don't have enough hogs. That's a production issue. Either we don't have enough demand or we have far too many hogs, I guess, which are related.
It's the low prices are going to discourage expansion. USDA also in the report increased their projection for Chinese corn production today. So there's talk that, you know, they're just going to have a bigger crop this year, or a good crop or a decent crop. So that's a big question. I think in regard to soybeans, China's going to do what it normally does. They're going to buy a lot of beans from the U.S. They're a little bit behind where they need to be. But in regard to corn, I still have this question in my head. Was 2020 and into 2021, was that a one and done when it comes to Chinese corn imports? Or is this something that we see continue more so like soybeans? I think that's still a question mark for me, at least.
For soybeans, speaking to those, many times producers will run those across the scale, make the sale, even at the lower USDA cash grain price, down some, 80 cents today. Is there a possibility that because of the six-month production cycle for soybeans that there will be a weather market that producers could take advantage of maybe in November, December, possibly January?
Absolutely, yeah. Brazil is going to plant a record amount of soybean acreage. That's a guarantee. They increase acreage every single year. But the size of the crop, of course, and yields are dependent on weather. They're dry now. September can be a wet month, and there's a lot of time for things to change. But yeah, I mean, you got to have that big crop in Brazil. And if they don't get it, you've got, plenty of opportunity for a weather market this fall, winter, and into early next year. And if you have the ability to hold on to this year's bean crop long enough, you've got the opportunity to trade next year's U.S. weather market. So there's a lot of time there for the farmer who has storage and the ability to hold some beans that aren't priced.
You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may hear the whole of our program online anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Aaron Curtis from Midco, Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, and Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. More comfortable weather moved in for the first full week of September. Average temperatures this past week ranged from the mid-60s in northern Illinois to the mid-70s in central and southern Illinois, between 1 and 3 degrees below normal for this time of the year. The official numbers for August and climatological summer came in this week. Statewide, August was 2.2 degrees above the long-term average and 20th warmest on record. Summer average temperature statewide was 1.3 degrees above the long-term average and the 30th warmest summer on record, while the average summer minimum temperature statewide was 2.7 degrees above average and the 8th highest on record. Several states in the West, including California, Utah, and Idaho, recorded their record warmest summer, pushing summer 2021 to within 0.1 degrees of the record 1936 summer. Technically, this makes 2021 the warmest summer on record for the contiguous United States. A cold front made its way across the region on Tuesday, bringing rain to most and wind and hail to an unlucky few. The NOAA Storm Prediction Center recorded 25 reports of hail across Illinois on Tuesday, including 2-inch hail in Lee and LaSalle counties. There were also 43 reports of damaging winds across the state on Tuesday, including estimated 85 mile per hour gusts in Grundy and Will counties. 7-day precipitation totals range from less than a half an inch in northwest Illinois to over 3 inches in parts of east central Illinois this week. Average precipitation statewide was 0.22 inches above average, while total summer precipitation was 2.71 inches above average, making it the 21st wettest summer on record statewide. Looking ahead, temperatures and humidity are climbing and expected to reach into the upper 80s and lower 90s this weekend and into next week, although a cold front is expected to bring another shot of relief late next week. Farther out, Climate Prediction Center outlooks show highest odds of keeping above normal temperatures around at least through the third week of September, while precipitation outlooks lean to near normal conditions over the same time period. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.